On July 20, Kevin Kennedy, Director and General Counsel of the Government Accountability Board, issued a public statement saying why his agency should survive. It's an agency that's under fire in the Capitol. So I want to thank Kevin Kennedy for coming in to talk about your July 20 and the issues that it raised. Thanks, Kevin.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Steve. Happy to be here.
You issued this the afternoon after Governor Walker, at a press conference, again said that the agency should be, I'm going to be blunt, blown up. Those are my terms, not yours. Were you responding to Governor Walker's statement? Because he was kind of saying a me too to Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. So the genesis of your July 20 statement.
Well, it was clear the governor pretty much opened the dialogue. And I think it's important that it be a one-sided dialogue, because mostly what we've seen are statements bereft of facts, as a general rule, just position statements that were lawless, were unaccountable, that we need more transparency, and yet there's nothing specific to back it up. There's allusions to an audit report that, quite frankly, is exactly the kind of management tool you would expect a state agency to embrace and say, we've got some outside eyes with a national reputation that the Audit Bureau has that's telling you, here, from our perspective, are things you can do better. This is what we see. And unlike other agencies that have been recently audited, our report was there to the legislature less than 4 months after we received it. Almost everything has been addressed or pointed to where the burden's not on us to make that change. So nothing was ducked in that audit. There'll be a follow-up audit for the things that the Attorney General said we shouldn't share with them that are now permissible to be shared, which are more records about our complaint process. And I'm sure that, again, we'll get some, you know, I've never seen an audit that says, you do a good job. It's always, here's what we see and our perspective is this is how you can improve. And you take that for exactly what any good manager should do, and this is what the board did. They embraced it and said, okay, we thought we had really good communication paths, but obviously outsiders think it could be improved. It's not very well documented. Let's get more documentation for that communication.
The audit was just one thing cited. And another thing over the last 2 years, the role of the GAB in the John Doe investigations has earned you additional animus from some of the elected officials in the Capitol. Now, Gerald Nickel, your current board chair, told Mike Goucher that pretty much the GAB doesn't regret or didn't violate any laws on the John Doe. Is there anything you can say about John Doe?
There's not much we can say because, again, we don't start John Does. We start investigations, and for the GAB to start an investigation, it needs to make a finding of reasonable suspicion that there was a violation of the law. Clearly, it's not a secret that we started an investigation. Right. It's not a secret that the genesis of that was the district attorney coming to us after the attorney general said, I've got a conflict and I think the GAB is better suited for you to work with these kind of issues. So, you know, these are processes that are in place. The fact that the subject of those investigation may be the people in power, you shouldn't be surprised that there's going to be a reaction. If you look at what the State Elections Board did, which in those cases, the analysis by the staff, the deliberation by the board was public, they were taking on, people in power, both minority, majority members during its 34-year existence. What's surprising here is that because the legislature has put a cone of silence over GAB's deliberations and staff analysis, there's a lot of second-guessing. There's no, you know, it would be fine to second-guess it in the present tense, but when you don't know what it is, that's a challenge.
Are you talking about the secrecy laws that govern all John Doe proceedings in Wisconsin?
No, I'm not. That's a separate factor. I'm talking about when the Government Accountability Board was created, the legislature looked at the Elections Board and said, we don't want to see the staff analysis that goes to the board when a complaint is filed. We don't even want the complaint to be public. We don't want anything other than specific findings by the board that either there was no reasonable suspicion that there's a violation of the law here and we're dismissing the complaint, or we've entered into a settlement agreement, Are we found by clear and convincing evidence that we're going to bring this lawsuit for a civil forfeiture? Are we found probable cause there's going to, and refer it to the district attorney? The deliberations, the analysis, all of that is kept from the public. And so when you have statements made by bloggers, by legislators, by other public officials that don't have access to that information and are just making assumptions, it really inhibits the disclosure, but it's a legislative imposed confidentiality. It is not something that we're hiding behind, and it's something that, you know, we're not going to put ourselves in violation of because there are criminal penalties.
Do you believe now, 7 years past the creation of GAB, that secrecy law should be changed for a more transparent process?
Absolutely, and that's not a change of opinion on my part. I operated for 34 years, 28 years, as the counsel and director of the Elections Board, where the work that I did and the work that my staff did was subject to that kind of commentary. It was not unusual for people to take issue outside of that, and that's fine. In testimony in 2007, when they were creating the GAB, I suggested there was no reason to have campaign finance and lobbying discussions or analysis done in secret. But there was a concern by the legislature, and it's a balancing test that they came down on one side, which was in so many of these cases, they're politically charged, they're groundless, and why give credence to them by making them public? And in other cases where there might be some substance, maybe it would facilitate the investigation if the complaints are not open to public inspection initially, so that the investigators are worried about people trying to bury evidence.
The Supreme Court on July 6th shut down the John Doe investigation. It made it clear it's shut down. Let me ask you this. GAB has been criticized for an overreach by participating in the John Doe. Do you think GAB overreached? Do you have any misgivings? Did GAB do anything wrong when it got involved and authorized this investigation?
Well, again, the board's authorization was based on credible evidence presented to the board. Five judges, we were missing one at the time, voted unanimously that this merited an investigation. It didn't say that it came to a conclusion there was a clear violation of the law, but there was reasonable suspicion to believe that. So the board, based on the law as it had articulated to the public back in 2008, and the former elections board had articulated to the public in 2000, and what was posted on our website is, here's the guidance with respect to coordinated political activity. And it's based on federal law, it was based on a state court of appeals case, and it was exactly the advice that attorneys were using to give to their clients. It was the advice that the GAB and its staff was using to give in response to inquiries on that. What came out of the Supreme Court decision was just a cursory dismissal of what had been the law up until that point. I mean, there's a recognition that the Supreme Court was changing its evaluation of the regulation of political activity. And a lot of Wisconsin's laws were falling, and the legislature wasn't adapting to that. Most of our contribution limits, in terms of cumulative limits, are gone, or the limits on a single individual's total activity are gone. We still have limits on what a single individual can give to a candidate or to a political party, but not right. to other groups. And the legislature hasn't caught up to that yet, and we had to defend those laws when those lawsuits were brought, but we called on the legislature in the wake of Citizens United to work with us and make some changes, recognizing that corporations were going to have more speech. But all those cases talked about independent speech. It did not talk about coordinated activity, except to the extent to say, we're not talking about coordinated activity.
Well, in her dissent in the John Doe ruling, Justice Shirley Abrahamson said, used two words, anything goes, implying that it's kind of a, there's no limits on campaign finance donations in Wisconsin. We're looking at the 2016 elections. They've already started, Feingold versus Johnson. Are there any limits anymore?
Well, there are certain limits that are still in place, and there's some level of disclosure.
But most of them have been well, erased, haven't they?
What's been taken away are the limits on what a single individual or a single group, no matter how they are organized, can say independently of the candidates. If they want to give directly to the candidates, either in the form of in-kind contributions or cash, there's limits based on the office, $500 for the Assembly, $1,000 for the Senate, and the legislature, I assume, will talk about, are those limits too low since they came about in 1974? But that's, again, like I talked about earlier, you know, one of those balancing of interests that the legislature is going to have to make. But the cumulative limits, you know, by telling the legislature you can only take so much from special interests total, those are gone. Again, it took a court to do that, but you could see it happening through U.S. Supreme Court cases. What this latest decision simply said was, in order to figure out what is political activity, even though the U.S. Supreme Court says you don't have to have this bright a line, this is the bright line we're going to put in place because, again, the law currently doesn't establish a clear enough set of guidance. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld broader than express advocacy or its functional equivalent. It allows the regulation of ads that mention candidates or show their likeness within a certain period of time, depending on the distribution area, recognizing that those are going to have an impact on elections, even though they don't expressly advocate an election or defeat. But this court said, we're going to limit this to a very bright line. We're not going to cross any further. Right. We're not going to look at what the factors that courts have upheld in the past in terms of interaction between a candidate and other entities with respect to that political activity.
Going back to the creation of GAB, as you say, it was authorized in 2007, set up in 2008, merger of the old Elections and Ethics Board. Your statement refers to the functions of the GAB: elections, ethics, campaign finance, and lobbying laws. Is GAB been charged with doing too much?
I don't think so. In fact, you know, a lot of people say the genesis of the GAB was really the failure of the two previous boards to act on the caucus scandal.
Yep.
Which really was, you know, a secret operation. And once that cover of secrecy was broken, the district attorneys took the lead in that. And they made it very clear to our agencies, we're not sharing anything. We're going to take this on our own. So we were cut out once the cover was blown on that.
Yeah.
And to criticize them for not knowing about the cover, you know, I remember testifying in one of the trials, well, isn't it true that people didn't know they shouldn't be doing this? And my answer was, well, actually, people would come into my office at 2 in the afternoon and say, I'm on my lunch break. They were very much aware that they couldn't do it, so much so that they had to offer an explanation as to why they were doing campaign research on our records when they were on state time.
Job one of the GAB is administering the elections, right? You guys counted 3 million votes for the president in 2014. Do you see that as the primary function, the administration and the tabulation of votes?
Can I poke something at you?
Sure.
We didn't count any presidential votes in 2014.
They were
all done in 2012.
You're right.
And it was over 3 million votes in 2012 and
yes.
2008. And that is a key function. And I think
is it job one?
I don't know if it's job one. I think all four of those areas are job one. And I think that was one of the points I didn't follow up on, is that in addition to the caucus scandal, what really the feedback I got from a lot of our customers, mainly legislators, were, I want one-stop shopping. I'm a candidate for public office, and when I come in to get advice from you, which is what we do, or when I'm looking for information, I don't want to have to go to four different places. I want to know, what does it take to get me on the ballot? I want to know who's making those decisions. I need to know about my compliance with ethics, my personal financial disclosure, or where I can turn to if I have a conflict of interest question. I want to know about who's trying to influence the body I'm going to join as a legislator if mm-hmm. I'm elected. I want to know about the campaign finance requirements. And if I have to go to four different places to get those answers, that's not a good use of government time. And I think that was really also a key to the creation of the Government Accountability Board. And those are very distinct areas, but they're so tied to each other. I can't tell you how many times the ethics director, Roth Judd, and I would talk about the fact that, I'm getting these campaign finance questions, Roth would say, or they call me about getting on the ballot. I said, yeah, I know. They ask me the same questions about conflicts of interest or lobbying. And you could hear the frustration. Here's my answer, but you need to talk to the ethics board to get some more clarity on
right.
this. And so in that sense, we provide a tremendous service.
Why would it be a mistake to go back to the old elections board model?
Well, you know, how you structure those four areas varies across the country. And we were unique. We weren't unique in the fact that the people who did the day-to-day work were always required to be nonpartisan. So, you know, since I started working in this field as staff counsel and as director of the both elections board and government accountability board, I've been required to be nonpartisan and keeps some more money in my pocket. I don't have to make campaign contributions. I don't have to sign nomination papers or other petitions. I don't have to endorse. Keeps me in the best seat in the business, watching what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a hot seat, but go ahead.
It can be uncomfortable, but that's true for any seat that's at the top. What it does, I think, quite frankly, is it says these folks are not going to meddle. They're not going to be players. And that's one of the problems that you saw across the country. Following the 2000 election, people were surprised how differently elections were run throughout the country. Very surprised that the chief election officer, the Secretary of State of Florida, could serve on a presidential campaign as that state's director. We saw the same problem with a different political party in California, and Ohio's probably the best example where again, you had a Republican Secretary of State who served as the state's political director for the presidential campaign, followed by a Democrat who was doing the same thing, shading the rules to benefit their parties. And that's, you know, that really, I think, undermines public confidence when you have someone with partisan ties overseeing what essentially are the underpinnings of government. How do we get our government? Through elections. How do we see our government? Through campaign finance disclosure, lobbying disclosure. How do we hold them accountable? The ethics disclosure, and knowing that they can get a trusted source of advice for conflicts of interest.
It's one thing to say that the Government Accountability Board should be restructured. It's another to say, as Speaker Voss did, that you should be dismissed. How do you feel when it becomes personal like that, Kevin?
Well, I'm not going to get personal back. You know, anytime someone's criticizing your job performance, it's personal. And, you know, I've said this before. I am one of the most accountable officials in state government. And people used to say, who made you god of elections? You weren't elected. And I said, no. But if I'm not doing my job, a job that I've been doing for 32 years now as the chief election officer for the state, it only takes four votes to take me out of that position. And it's done by a citizen board. In this case, former judges who are trained decision makers who aren't afraid to make tough decisions, including getting rid of someone who's been there for a long time, if that's the case, or telling him how he can improve. It doesn't take a million votes and waiting 4 years like you would have with an elected Secretary of State.
If it came down to this, we'll let the Government Accountability Board continue to exist in its current form if you resign. Would you resign to save your agency?
I don't think it's a question of my having to resign to save the agency. If the most important thing to the legislature is to get rid of me, they did that once before. When they created the Government Accountability Board, my position, it was specifically stated that the incumbent did not have rights to any position moving forward in that agency. And so I had to be rehired to a different position. In that agency, I had no guarantee, you know, going into 2008 that I would have a job. It would be up to the new citizen board to make that decision. And however the legislature structures that decision making is how it should be done. I don't think I need to play a martyr by saying I'm going to go for the good of the agency. I think the agency has enough merit on itself. If there's a question about the leadership, and there have been proposals to have that person confirmed by either the Senate or the full legislature, and that's not a new thing in terms of proposals that have been talked about for the chief election officer around the country, let them put that into place.
But you would like to stay on the job?
Well, you know, I've been doing it for 32 years, longer when you consider my time as a staff counsel and my time as acting director of the former State Elections Board. And I have a vested professional interest in it. I've always viewed the job as a trust. I've known that when I was appointed to the job, both in 1983 with the Elections Board and 2007 with the Government Accountability Board, that it could be a three-week job, a three-month job, a three-year job. I would love to work through the next presidential election from a professional standpoint. I'm happy with the work I've done. I'm very proud of the people that I've worked for, both the Elections Board and the Government Accountability Board members have been outstanding people to work for. I have a tremendous staff who make me look a whole lot better than I really am.
You, the agency recently, GAB, has been involved in some major controversies. Well, I'm sorry, that's the wrong word. You had a statewide recount for the Supreme Court, Prosser Kloppenburg. You had recalls of state senators. You had recalls of the governor and lieutenant governor. Are these tough calls that the agency had to make, GAB, both the policymaking judges and yourself, is this the reason that you're so unpopular among Governor Walker, Senator Fitzgerald, Speaker Voss?
Well, maybe 50% of the people were unhappy with the calls that were made by the board in those cases, and 50% weren't. Or maybe it's split other ways. There's some people who would have wanted an entirely different decision. I prefer to look at those things as opportunities. They were certainly challenging times, unprecedented in looking at it. You know, we'd handled recall elections before. They were lightning rods. Some of them didn't even get off the ground. You know, Senator Harney, Senator George had failed attempts to recall, ultimately a successful attempt against Senator George, but and Senator Petak. We had, you know, Representative Holprin, who then later was recalled and survived both of those elections.
Only to come back as state senator,
yeah,
yes.
Right. But, you know, those are the kind of challenges that an agency head is going to run into over the course of their career. You know, the state, we had, that was the second statewide recount we did. We had one back in 1989 as well over a referendum issue. But it was a great opportunity for us to learn some things. And quite frankly, it pointed out some problems in some places, you know, notably Waukesha County and the fact that a single person was trying to run the show in a, when all the conventional wisdom about how you run elections is you build in redundancy, you build in assistance on that, that's where you get into trouble, and that's exactly what happened. Or practices, we learned how well our voting equipment performed despite the fact it's old, that the accuracy, you notice the, you know, the difference in the vote totals was very small, and most of it involved either a hand counting problem or it involved a decision making involving some nuns up in Sauk County who did not get the right direction about needing a witness on their absentee ballots, and so by law they were thrown out.
When Governor Walker talked about blowing up the GAB again, my term, not yours.
It was his term as well.
Okay, my point is, he said we need people who are accountable. Now, in capital speak, that means partisans. What about the idea of a hybrid GAB board, X number of judges plus X number of political partisans? Is that a potential change that you think would be good for the standpoint of all the jobs you do, elections, ethics, campaign finance, and lobbying?
That's certainly an option. I mean, from the time we started, there was always talk about giving the board members more input into, quote, how things really work. That was the message we got from the Democrats when they were in control in 2009, 2010. And remember, what the board is there for is to make decisions. You know, the staff is there to present them with opportunities and options on those decisions, and the public has plenty of time to weigh in on that. You know, if we were to take that cloak of secrecy off, you'd have a lot more people weighing in saying, oh, you know, here's a memo from Director Kennedy or Division Administrator Becker or Haas or one of the staff counsel, you know, it's a little thin here, or they've really nailed it here. We hope that, you know, it adds to the discussion on that. When they talk about partisan members being more accountable because you know where they're coming from, like the old elections board? Yes, that was true. And you can get that same accountability with our current board members by having them discuss the things that are currently secret in public. And you'll know what their perspective is on an issue, and you can label it any way you want, you know, from blue to red, right to left, conservative to liberal, whatever label outside groups want to put on those things, but you would get that opportunity. That's really what you're going to see as far as more accountability. Already, you know, this agency, the governor still has to appoint the people. You know, the top three people serve at the pleasure of the board, so it doesn't, you know, they've got a sword hanging over their heads in terms of their performance.
And you have had on GAB Republicans and Democrats.
Well, everybody has a past.
Yes.
You know, I get criticized for my staff on that sometimes, but everybody has a past, and everybody has an opportunity when they come into this job, whether they are the board members or the staff, they know what their responsibilities are. They know what their accountability is. And the fact that, yes, judges often serve in the legislature, serve as district attorneys, both of which are partisan offices, they have a past. But the key advantage to judges is they're there for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're trained decision makers. You could get that from other groups. But, you know, the old elections board, they were there for 2 years.
That pendulum swung back and forth depending on which party was in control of the Capitol.
It could. I mean, there were some really, really sharp people on the elections board when you look at that. And they could make decisions as well, but it tended to be more this partisan decision-making rather than this consensus decision-making.
2 and 3 years ago, one criticism was that the GAB's decisions were too much influenced by the staff. Response? I think I heard that from Senator Fitzgerald.
Well, you know, the staff are the paid professionals. They give the information to the board. I think it's an insult to the board to say they didn't digest this, that they aren't capable of looking beyond this. And I can tell you there are lots of decisions we make that the board doesn't adopt whole cloth, that they tailor it to this. And I think that's the way it should be. The truth is, as a staff, you are an institutional entity just like any other agency. And so the tendency is to look at things from what you've always done before. And board members are going to say, why are we doing this? And I think that's the check you have. This is why Wisconsin brings citizens in on boards. This is why they do not have for many of their key functions, you know, institutional bureaucrats running the whole show or partisan political appointees running the whole show. They have citizens who bring a certain level of expertise. When we're regulating doctors and pharmacists and other groups, they bring in the people who are in the regulated industry. When we're looking at trying to make key decisions about who qualifies for the ballot, how to interpret laws that weren't made as clear by the legislature when they were adopting, say, the voter ID law, or what advice do we give this person who's trying to sell a business and there might be legislation that has an impact on that. You bring in people who can sort through that, who can give advice and make decisions, and that's the strength that the board members bring to this.
Going forward, the greatest need of GAB, and I've got to add, if it survives, is it some clarification of campaign finance laws from the ledge? Is that the greatest need going forth? I mean, you're going to argue, number one, as you did in your statement, please preserve GAB because it's worked and a model for the nation. And I'm quoting your statement. I'm not saying that. But
I'll say it.
I understand. Greatest need for GAB going forth, clarification on campaign finance laws in the wake of Citizens United, in the wake of the John Doe ruling, in the wake of Bulkley versus Vallejo 1976?
And what we refer to as Barlin.
The Barlin too. Case.
Absolutely. I mean, the GAB unanimously said to the legislature at the beginning of this year, you need to focus on these areas. Campaign finance law change is always difficult. You know, again, it's been over 5 years since Citizens United came out.
Yeah.
And there's been no significant changes. There were no significant changes prior to that time. You know, we had a big change after the Buckley case in 1976. The board, the old campaign finance law and the board, elections board were created in 74. So campaign finance is clearly a big issue. I also think you got to remove the cloud that we're not accountable. You know, that is just, you know, a myth that needs to be punctured. You know, the fact is that, you know, people can see exactly what we do except for those that decision making, and that can be changed very easily. That was a legislative policy decision. It's not our decision, but it is our decision to comply with that rather than risk jail time or a $10,000 fine.
Okay, final question. We're almost out of time. How are you, as a director of GAB and the judges who serve on GAB, how are you going to fight for the agency's life in the political environment in the Capitol?
I think the best thing we can do is point out what we do well, point out that you know, the decisions that you make on the structure are going to have ramifications down the road. If you're going to take an independent agency and subject it, tie it to partisan strings, you should not be surprised that those decisions, like we've seen in the past across the country, are going to shade to the benefit of one side or the other, as opposed to just being unhappy because you came out on the short end on some decision. If you want to know why you came out on the short end, remove the veil
secrecy.
Of secrecy.
Yeah, understand. Okay. Kevin Kennedy, Director and General Counsel of the Government Accountability Board, thank you for putting context to your public statement on July 20. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Steve.
Thank you.